It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome in. Happy Saturday. It's Mego and John Lyons. Chris Scheim, our guy, is taking a much-needed vacation, so props to him having the day off. He'll be back next week, but John Lyons, how you doing today?
It's
horribly gloomy outside. How are you feeling?
I appreciate more than anyone else that Scheim took a vacation because I get to be here, so
okay,
I'm doing
nice.
All right.
That's a nice attitude to bring in. Other people would say, he's taking a vacation in the middle of this, right after the Steph Diggs news, blah, blah, blah. But you jumped.
No, that's right. I mean, hey, there's plenty of hosts in Boston that took vacations during the Steph Diggs news. I'm sorry.
Well.
You know, I won't go there. But, yeah, no, and now the Patriots are better than they were a week ago, Mego.
Yeah, well, okay, so you think so. So we're going to cover a lot of Steph Diggs. I was there at the press conference yesterday. We're going to get into the dreadful stretch that Rafael Devers is having to start the Red Sox season. We're going to touch a little bit on Celtics. We'll welcome your calls on anything else Boston sports. 617-779-7937 is your number. But you heard from Steph Diggs there, and as I said, I was at the press conference yesterday. That particular answer was to one Phil Perry, friend of yours and mine, John Lyons, and the way that Phil asked this question was, I think he was trying to ask him how he was going to have his competitive nature kind of under control and focused in the right direction when he's dealing with his teammates.
Yeah.
And I think he took it as like, how are you going to channel that competitiveness to cornerbacks who are covering you? Which is why we got that goofy spanking line. And as soon as he said it, he's like, I'm sorry, I've already stepped in it.
Yeah, and when you think about Diggs coming in, the biggest concern to me is the injury stuff, of course. We may not see him till Columbus Day. I know there's reports he'll be on track for week one. But the other side concern, if you will, was how does he come in and mesh if he's not getting the ball as much as he's accustomed to? Or even if, let's say, he comes back in the first couple weeks, he's just not playing that well because he's coming back from injury. And I think that part of it, to me, Mego, honestly, isn't as much of a concern as maybe it is for other people for a couple reasons. One, when he went to Houston last year, they had Nico Collins, they had Tank Dell. He walked into that situation at a minimum as the number two, maybe even the number three guy. And he knew that going in, and he still had 47 catches in 8 games and was a big part of their early season success, if you will. And then the other part of it, this is why you hired Mike Vrabel, you hired Josh McDaniels, you hired guys with Super Bowl rings, with heavy coaching experience, so that way you can have a culture of a program that's strong enough that if one guy gets upset, flies off the handle a little bit, you can deal with it.
Yeah, I think the Houston comparison is kind of a tough one because there have been a lot of reports from those who were in Houston last year saying that Stefon Diggs was a model citizen down there. But again, when you're being asked to be the number two or number three guy, we talk about ego and then we talk about the expectations that are put on you. And he's clearly the number one guy. Like if
he's 80, the one and the two, it feels like.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's a different level of pressure, especially coming back from an injury. But I want to get into the press conference yesterday. Your first impressions watching that press conference, how do you feel he presented himself? And there's been so much made of his character concerns. And I say that like, I don't know a better way to say it, because like we used to talk about character concerns as like somebody is having major off-field issues,
right,
substance abuse issues, issues with law enforcement. This is like you got caught on camera yelling at Josh Allen. So I feel like there's different levels to this, but it's clearly something that follows him when he switched teams from Minnesota to Buffalo to Houston.
But I will say, I feel like early on in those places, things went really well. Like early on in Minnesota, things went, I know he didn't play his first few games of his rookie year, but after that, things went really well. His first year or two in Buffalo, things seemed to go really, really well. It wasn't until that final year. Remember, he like skipped a day of minicamp and Josh Allen said it's not a big deal, but Sean McDermott said it was a big deal on the same day. And it felt like last year, again, playing in Houston, by the way, his receiver coach down there, Ben McDaniels, Josh's brother. So being down there, it seemed to go well through those eight games. So I just, again, I'm not saying it's a nothing burger, but I just don't have as many concerns about his competitive fire, his outburst, if what you want to call it that, over the course of the year. And don't get me wrong, there'll probably be one or two times this year where cameras catch him on the sidelines yelling about something, but if that's the extent of it, I mean, that wouldn't be the first or last time we see. Like, I don't envision him as a guy that's going to come in and cause a rupture in the locker room. I mean, heck, that receiver room was the worst in the league last year. I mean, what are we...
They didn't need him to be a disaster.
Yeah, what are we so worried about? Like, that's the thing. So I don't worry about him coming in and causing some sort of rupture. I just really, again, I'm not sitting here saying he's going to be, you know, a choir boy and never yell at anyone, but I just don't see him causing the sort of rupture that maybe some other people are worried. The injury to me is the bigger issue than the character stuff.
My big takeaway from being in the room yesterday, Steph Diggs is smart. Like, he comes off very sharp. And I have not dealt with him in a huge capacity before, so I didn't know what to expect from him. That guy's an alpha. And that's something that this team has lacked in a major way, not just in the receiver room since Julian Edelman left, but really on offense overall. And it's this, we're going to get to Bentley being released, which was announced midday yesterday. Really announced by him, because he goes out and tweets it and the Patriots release a statement later in the day. But there's this question about what kind of leadership you want in the room. And I think Diggs is a big part of this, where if Diggs is producing 80% of what he was on track to last year before the week 8 injury, I think he kind of sets a standard. And he sets a standard for a room of younger receivers. That's Pop Douglas, Kayshon Booty, Baker and Polk, who I'm starting to treat like Lexington and Concord. Like, Baker and Polk always have to go together because they're both unproductive and were kind of pains in the asses at different points of the last year. So if he, I think he can set a standard of, like, even in that press conference, he said it took some tough lessons for him to develop the maturity to know when I have a moment to shine, I'll shine, and that I have to take advantage of that. And if I don't, the only person it's on is me. And that's something that I think somebody could have told Jalen Polk in week 2 last year. And maybe if it got through his head, it would have avoided a world of hurt that we had for the rest of the season.
Yeah, could have told him that in August. I mean, forget about week 2. And yeah, I think if you just look at this Patriots offense, who's the best player on the offense? Stephon Diggs right now. I mean, if you want to say
Stephon Diggs greater than Drake May?
I was going to say, if you want to say Drake May, but I'm, you know, second year guy still developing, you could really make the case Stephon Diggs is at least the
that's
most talented guy
who
already.
Who is more talented? Stephon Diggs at 31 coming back from an ACL, or Drake May, what is he, 22 now?
22 in his second year.
Going into his second year with all the turnovers he had last season. And a terrible staff around him last year.
And I think, too, a key thing about the Stephon Diggs thing, and the reason I'm excited about it, and I think the best thing about it, Mago, this is the first time, for my money, since Rob Gronkowski in 2018, maybe Edelman in 2020 if you want to go that far, that this offense has had someone a defensive coordinator has to game plan for. I mean, really, when was the last time? You want to say Stevenson in 2022, but that was really all about Matt Patricia force-feeding him, both in the passing game and the run game.
Stevenson might be the most overhyped player on the Patriots of, like, the last 10 years.
That's another really good discussion.
And I'm sorry to say it, like, this is a quick aside, but when we look around the locker room and we're like, who's going to be the captains now that David Andrews is out and Juwan Bentley is out and Dietrich Wise is gone and you have Matthew Slater retiring 2 years ago, like all these guys departing, John Jones, Ramondre has never been a captain. And he's been around for a while at this point. And he's had his best production when he was tag teaming with Damian Harris. Like, the way that everybody talks about Ramondre, the way that they said they were basically building their entire offense around Ramondre Stevenson last year, like, I'm just done with that.
Yeah, and I know we have another month to the draft, but one of the things I think they need to invest in at least day three of the draft is more guys in the running back room, in part because of that. I mean, Stevenson, 600 yards rushing his rookie year, looked like a guy, ooh, this could be a lead back. Like I said, 2022, Matt Patricia force-fed him, so he did put up 1,000 yards rushing and I think, was it 60-something catches? But he has not, to me, taken that next step to be one of the better running backs in the NFL. And last year, 7 fumbles as a running back, and many of them consequential. You look at that Bills game, that fumble in the third quarter, changed the game. Of course, he was part of that backwards pass fiasco they had in that game, too. Mm-hmm. So he had, I think, not just turnovers, and not just 7, but key turnovers. And when you look at players on this offense, okay, Drake May is a guy you feel great about going forward. I feel good about DeMario Douglas going forward. I feel good about Hunter Henry. I think I feel better about Stephon Diggs than I at least do those guys. So that's the thing. They have not had a guy that a defense has had to really look at and say, hey, we got to at least stop this guy.
The guy was really Drake May last year.
And even
like,
May,
stop him from running.
You knew if you were a defense, and I'm a big Drake May guy. I think he's going to be a great player. But if you were a defense, you knew he'll probably give us one every game. And he's a rookie, and he had multiple injuries. So, again, I'm just saying, if you're game planning against it, now this is a guy, it's like, okay, this is a dude that, as long as he's healthy, we got to make sure we stop him or else we might lose.
I think it's a great point, and it's something that the Patriots have been lacking on the field in terms of forcing other teams to game plan them for them since Julian Edelman has been gone. But I also do think that, as crazy as it might sound, like, maybe I'm just veering too far to the other end of the spectrum. Maybe I'm just, I don't know, taken by the charisma, the charm that Diggs presented himself with yesterday. I do think that there's something to having somebody in the locker room who is an elite talent and also won't take crap from others. And maybe that amounts to some shouting matches on the sideline. But you see that with really good teams all around the league. Like, if there is an attitude that Diggs brings where he's producing and he turns to somebody else who he knows isn't studying, somebody else who isn't staying after practice and getting their reps in with Drake or the number two quarterback or Joe Milton or whatever, like, there may be a level of accountability there that they've been looking for from a veteran that they haven't been able to find. They brought KJ Osborne in last year because they wanted him to be this veteran presence in the locker room. Barely saw the field. So what does that do for you? Like, it helps in a way to have somebody who has that competitive drive, because if he produces, then it sets the standard for the rest of the room.
And this is something Mike Vrabel has talked about for a long time. You go back to when he's talked about those 2003-04 Patriots teams was on. He talked about the quote-unquote edge guys that, oh, I'm doing this, you got to keep up with me. I'm putting in this extra work, you need to keep up with me. Patriots, frankly, could use guys like that. Another reason why I think the Carlton Davis signing is great. Not only is he a really good player and he's going to help their defense a lot, that dude won a Super Bowl in Tampa Bay and was just part of the number one seed in Detroit. Like, he knows what it takes to produce at a high level, to win at a high level. That's a good thing for Christian Gonzalez and Marcus Jones and Kyle Duggar and those guys, right? Even Milton Williams, right? I know they already have Christian Barmore. They have some pieces there, but this dude just won a Super Bowl with dominant defensive line play. Like, signings like that, and I know Diggs hasn't won a Super Bowl, but he's played in an AFC championship game. He's gone deep in the playoffs. He's been a lead dog. He's been a number two guy. Like, that's a valuable thing to have when you're preparing week in and week out for games, but it's a valuable thing to have, Mego, on April 1st and April 2nd in the offseason when guys got to do what they need to do to get where they need to get preparation-wise.
Absolutely. All right, how are you feeling about Steph Diggs? Steph Diggs, now a greater talent on your roster than Drake May? That is an interesting conversation to me. Is he the first player that other teams have to game plan for since Julian Edelman? How are you feeling about the contract details, which we will get into on the other side, as well as what happens if it doesn't go well? Then what Steph Diggs do we see and what Patriots team do we see? All that after trending with...
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
One night, one goal, stop suicide. On June 21st, New York City will host the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's milestone 30th Out of the Darkness Overnight Walk. Join thousands as we journey over 16 miles from dusk till dawn for a night of healing and hope while raising much-needed funds and awareness for this important cause. Register today at theovernight.org or call 888-THE-OVERNIGHT, 888-843-6837.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Jacob. Oh, the Cure. Intern Jacob, are you a Cure guy?
I am.
Really? That's like so long before you were born. It's long before I was born. So it's really long before you were born.
I mean, I tend to like bands from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and early 2000s.
This is because you're like a cool New York kid, right?
Definitely.
Okay. Well, Megan Adeline here with John Lyon. We're with you till 2 p.m. today. Then we're throwing it over to Travis Thomas. But right now we're talking Steph Diggs. Steph Diggs' introductory press conference yesterday. I said I feel like he's an alpha in the room, the type of personality that shouldn't be a hindrance but should rather be something that the Patriots have been lacking, especially if he's able to produce on the field. John Lyon says maybe he's a better talent right now than Drake May. And you're a huge Drake May guy, so that's a place to jump off.
Yeah, and I think, look, obviously in the long term, Drake May's going to be the better and more important player. But just at this stage, if Diggs is healthy, we're talking about an all-pro level talent. When was the last time the Patriots had an all-pro level talent on their offense? If you want to include May in his projection, fine. But prior to that, when was the last
time? Good Lord.
A legit, maybe... Get this, Mike Onwenu in 2020, his rookie year at right tackle, he was fantastic.
Is that the last time?
Seriously,
that is atrocious.
Like an all-pro level.
What a horrible thing you've brought up for us.
If you think about it, because even David Andrews has missed some time, their skill group. Even in 2021,
let's make it worse. Let's take out linemen. Yes. Who's the last skill player who was all-pro? Well, let's not even say all-pro. Let's say pro bowler.
Level talent.
No, and we're not counting Mac Jones because he's an all-pro.
2019, Antonio Brown. The two weeks they had him.
It was like 10 days.
Yeah. So if only he hadn't threatened that lady's kids, maybe they would have won the Super Bowl. I don't know.
That was the only time I ever saw Bill Belichick lose his crap in a press conference vicinity.
Yeah.
Was when he had to announce that they were releasing Antonio Brown and then walked out, slammed the door, and we heard the F-bomb as he was walking down the hallway. I was like, damn.
That's a nice little inside story.
This was a mess.
Well, and not to go fully down that road.
Oh, boy.
That team in the first 2 weeks, what'd they win? 33-3 against the Steelers and then 43-0 against the Dolphins with Brown? Like, they would have won the Super Bowl. Like, seriously. And then they give a second-round pick for Sanu, not an all-pro level talent. So, really, if you look back, the last time they probably had an all-pro level player in this offense was probably Mike Onwenu in 2020.
What about Josh Gordon?
He was 2019, right? So, but he was only part of the year that year because he was in and out. I mean, I guess technically, I'll give you that.
I wanted so much better for him. You know, like he had a lot of substance abuse issues, whether
if he had played 10 years later.
The harder stuff he was on when he was younger or just having issues with the marijuana policy in the league. But it was always like, that was a guy for whatever reason that I was just like rooting for to figure it out. And he never really
was. It 2012, he got suspended the first two games and still led the league in receiving yards. Like it was crazy. Yeah, and even like 2021, Kendrick Bourne had 800 yards receiving. Hunter Henry was good. Those weren't all pro level guys.
No.
Like, it's been a long time.
Nobody's game planning for Hunter Henry or Kendrick Bourne.
No, and I don't say that to be disrespectful, but you look at last year's Patriots offense, where teams saying, oh my God, we got to take Hunter Henry out of the passing game. We got to take Austin Hooper out of the passing game. Like,
Offensive line was like, don't worry, we'll do that for you.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Like, do we have to game plan for DeMontre Jacobs, like, at right tackle? Like, no, like, you know what I mean? Like, there was no one there. And maybe to your point, it was May at times, but even you go back, I mean, they beat the Jets, May gets hurt. The Chicago game, they beat the Jets, the Chicago game, they win. The Bears had the OC and the head coach fired within a month. So, like, that was even more about other stuff than it was teams game planning around May.
Yeah, it's been an incredibly dire stretch for skills players on offense. I think this caller may have an issue with some of our categorizing of Steph Diggs. Dan in Rhode Island. Dan, what's going on today?
Not so much categorizing, just depressing.
Yeah?
Julian Edelman to me was a great player, but I don't think he was a guy that you really game plan for. He was just a guy that moved the chains. A guy that you game plan for is a guy who makes big chunk plays and can stretch the field. And with Diggs, look, I just don't see. Was it one other team even in on him until this week?
He said yesterday that he was in conversation with several other teams. The Patriots were the only team that he actually visited in person.
Yeah, I just don't consider him. I'm not saying he's washed, but two things that don't really excite me about it. I mean, it's going to be a more competitive football team, but Diggs is not going to be a guy who's going to be here when the team gets back to whatever relevance consistently they need to get at. That's taken years. Mm-hmm. He's here for maybe one or two. And the thing is like, I think Devontae Adams is 10 times the player he is right now. And nobody's saying Devontae Adams is still an all-pro. He's a really good player, but he's really like a high-end number two. You know, I just don't see Diggs as being, I think you're just overvaluing all-pro. Sure, he was 5 years ago, and people are trying to make the comparisons what he did for Josh Allen. Josh Allen got him when he was 26 or 27 years old. There's no comparison to be made there at all. None.
Thank you, Dan. A lot of great points there. I agree that if you think that this is going to be 2020 Steph Diggs, 26 years old, putting up over 1,500 receiving yards, you've got a slap in the face coming because it's not going to be that. Even if he's back and healthy, the reality of somebody returning from an ACL, ACLs are very common. They're routine surgeries at this point. The rehab is very predictable. He says yesterday he's ahead of schedule and he feels good about that. Wouldn't go into further detail. But if you talk to guys who have come back in the NFL from ACL, it's really a year before you feel yourself.
We just saw it with Kendrick Bourne, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, he wasn't himself last year. And I would add, like, to the caller's point, he made some really good points there. I'm not saying Diggs is going to be an all-pro now. I think it's the first guy they've had with that level of talent in probably since Gronk in 2018. And I think an exercise to do, because the caller made a good point about, is he going to be here when they're really a great team once again? If you were building a truly great offense, Mega, Diggs is probably the number two guy in a great offense, right? But here he's going to have to be the one. And I still think there's value in him coming here. And even if he's a quote-unquote bridge number one guy for a couple
of
years. Exactly. So then a year from now or 2 years from now, when you hopefully are an actual great team again, maybe he's your second guy. Maybe he's moved on, but he helps build part of that foundation that gets you to being a great team. I mean, we kind of saw it, not a direct comparison, Wes Welker to Julian Edelman, right? Welker was here, laid the foundation at slot. I know he kind of followed Troy Brown a little bit, but laid the foundation. Edelman takes over, and as the team advances, and I know it's not apples to apples, but if you get that kind of passing of the baton from Diggs to whoever the next number one is, there's value in that.
There's a lot of question marks around Diggs. Is he going to play in the slot? Can he? He's probably not going to stretch the field, be an outside guy at this point. What is the balance going to be between him and the rest of the guys in the room? One clarification that we got from Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated yesterday, he tweeted out the details of Steph Diggs' three-year, $63.5 million deal. So if you remember Adam Schefter, he's the one who first broke the story that Diggs was signing with the Patriots, and he said it's $69 million, it's $26 million guaranteed. And you think, 69 for whatever, first of all, nice, but whatever your incentives are built into that, if he met all of that, that is a massive number for a 31-year-old coming off an ACL. Really doesn't matter. The guaranteed cash is the thing. So Breer has this further information. He says it's $16.6 million fully guaranteed, $22.6 million injury guaranteed, $18.5 million base pay this year, $3.5 million in-game roster bonuses in 25, and $5.5 million in total incentives. It's a year-to-year deal. So basically, it is a little bit of a prove-it situation, which is more pressure on Steph Diggs coming back from the injury, and I hope it doesn't rush him. But it's basically telling you that this is a $16.6 million one-year deal. Now, if you don't like that AAV, I understand. But it's not saying we're taking a 31-year-old coming back from injury and we're invested in him for 3 years, giving him cash, and we're going to have these cap hits. Like, it really is taking kind of a slightly expensive flyer on a guy who you hope is going to be a stopgap and kind of immediately improve your offense for Drake Mesick.
And this is a deal that's kind of in that Cooper Kupp, Davante Adams neighborhood. Not exactly the same, but if you went into free agency a month ago, or a few weeks ago, whenever it was, this is kind of the deal you might have expected him to get. That 1 or 2 year deal in the $16 to $25 million range with incentives. I mean, $3.5 million in per game roster bonuses. If he's back for week one, he'll get all those. But if he's not back till Columbus Day, he's going to miss a month worth of those incentives, and the deal is going to be even cheaper. So I think this is that deal. That, honestly, if we did a show 3 weeks ago and you said, what do you think Stephon Diggs will get? I probably would have said, yeah, maybe 1 year, $16 million, or 2 years at 22, something. And this is kind of right. And like, this deal doesn't surprise me at all. And for the Patriots, this is a smart way to structure it, because if he's really good and he hits those incentives, that means you have a good team and a good offense and he can stick around. And if he's not, okay, yeah, it costs you some guarantee up front, but it's not prohibitive for you to do other stuff this year and in the future.
So one thing that Diggs did a lot of yesterday was recounting the 10.5-year career that he's had through the NFL. One of the things that
made sure to mention the half.
10.5. He said that a couple times, but he went through his numbers last year. He's very aware that he was on pace for a 1,000-yard receiving yard season last year. And so just looking at who he was before the injury in week 8 in Houston, he had 47 catches. He was averaging about 10.5 yards per reception, and he had 496 receiving yards in week 8, just pretty much exactly halfway through the season, a little bit under. So let's say that he's available week 1 and he plays all 17 games. So this is like really in a perfect world where at least he's available through training camp and available in week 1. What is a successful year numbers-wise compared to those numbers for Diggs?
Yeah, I would say in the 75 catch range, maybe
75.
800-ish, 800 to 900. Yeah, because he was on pace for 100, but he's coming off an injury.
75 is a lot, John Lyons.
But they're going to force, I think, and I don't mean force it in a bad way per se, but I think he's just going to be a focal point of what they're doing. I mean, if he is healthy, I think he'll be able to adapt to the McDaniels offense. And I know people worry about, oh, Josh's offense, which I think is an overrated, and I'm not saying it's an easy offense, but he had an offense in Minnesota, different one in Buffalo. Buffalo changed coordinators, then another one in Houston. He's been productive in all those places. So I think he'll be fine adapting. But I just think they're going to make a point with him at the number one spot to feed him the ball a lot. And last year, you look at his snaps, it was almost 50-50 outside and slot alignment. So he's going to line up outside. He's going to line up in the slot. He's going to move all over the place. They're also going to, I think, use him in a role a lot. And this is going to sound maybe obvious, but he's going to be a huge third down guy for them. I mean, last year, he had 31 catches for first downs in 8 games. That would have been second on the Patriots for the whole season. tied with DeMario Douglas. So he is going to be a guy that they're going to use on first down, second down, I think especially on third down. So, yeah, I think that 70-75 catch range is not unreasonable to expect if he's healthy week one and ready to go.
That would be an outstanding return from him. I'm more like 65 to 70, so I'm not that far away from you. I just think 75 to 80 is what a lot of people are expecting.
And 65 would be good, to be clear.
I think 65 would be really good. I think you would get your money's worth, and it would be enough for you to say, this guy's happy, he's having a positive impact, he's a nice go-to for our young quarterback, so let's keep him around like this. The experiment is successful. The hypothesis has been realized. Like, good job, everybody. I don't think you can really get mad at that. If you're thinking that he's going to have well over 1,000 yards, I'm just saying don't see that happening, and I think you're going to be sorely disappointed.
And that's a function of their offense, too, right? Like, you look, okay, if you want a 1,000-yard receiver, well, Drake May is going to be in his first full year starting. You still, by the way, don't know what the left side of your offensive line is. I know we have the draft coming. He's going to be a guy that, again, he's working his way back from injury. But McDaniel's offense, not a ton of 1,000-yard guys. Really, over the course, I mean, Kendrick Bourne, again, had 800 in 2021. Gronk had a couple thousand.
Not a lot of 1,000-yard guys in New England. The last one to do it was Julian Edelman in 2020.
Right, 2020. Yeah, so it's just not, and again, part of it was when they had Brady, too. They had Gronk, Amendola, Edelman, Hogan.
Might have been 2019 because he had the injury.
Yeah, but I think it's just something that has not been a huge function of that offense. So I agree. I think 90 catches and 1,000 yards, kind of unreasonable to expect. But even last year, 8 games as the second receiver in Houston, he had 62 targets. That would have been fourth most on the Patriots for the whole year.
But we do, like, to your point about the McDaniels system, if you look at the numbers last year, which were totally dreadful for the entire receiver room, Hunter Henry led receiving yards and catches for the entire team. He had 66 catches. DeMario Douglas had 66, but slightly less yardage than Hunter Henry.
Henry had the most first down catches, too.
After that, it was like Kayshon Booty in the 500s. I mean, it was really, really dreadful. But even this year, you had to assume that bringing Austin Hooper back, having Hunter Henry, it's a very talented tight end draft, so who knows if they dip into that in any way and find something that they like. There is going to have to be distribution to those guys on top of finding Diggs, on top of working in Pop in the slot, on top of anybody else. I mean, who knows if they decide to bring in Travis Hunter? You know, like that's where when you look at the numbers, I feel like we don't have the context.
I feel like
it's a nice jumping off point.
You got to expect, and I maybe expect isn't right, Polk and Baker, one of those guys is going to be better than he was a year ago.
You think so?
I'm not saying they're going to be great, but those
Baker
dudes,
will be better. I don't know about Polk.
Those guys were so bad. And I think part of it, and you've mentioned that.
You have to say Polk and Baker like Lexington and Concord.
I know. You're really right. And you mentioned this, I think, on a previous show with Shime, that part of it was a wide receiver coaching issue. Part of it was a scheme overall issue. Part of it was you went from Jacoby Brissett to Drake May. You had no offensive line. Like, those were factors as well. But, I mean, I was there in training camp. They didn't develop that. From August to December, they got worse. So I don't think both of them will be good, but I do think one of them will be at least, and I'm not 25 or 30 catches, like 25 catches maybe one of them gets. And even that, again, that's not good, but that maybe would cut into Diggs having 100, something like that.
Yeah, well, we'll discuss that a little bit later, I'm sure. But let's get to some of the calls because you all are waiting patiently. Let's go to Nate in the truck who wants to talk about Diggs' contract. What's up, Nate?
What's going on, guys?
How you doing?
Good. Listen, I mean, we don't know with him coming off an ACL. And then everybody knows the way, with these running backs and the receivers, the way they cut and everything, it takes at least a year after the fact from an ACL injury to be your true self, okay? That's number one. Looking at the whole deal, what really kills me is I know you guys talk about it from time to time, but these guys get let off, because of the fact that they don't pay these guys. They don't get the true prime guys, elite guys in their prime to come to New England and play because they know this team, these players know this team will not pay for players that will come in here, and they have to pay the suck tax. And they just don't get it because all along here, they think what blows my mind also, too, they keep thinking they've got Brady and Belichick. Okay, you gotta set a core here. And if you have to go out and overpay for guys to finally establish something here, you have to do that. If not, you're going to keep going. It's like the reverse cycle that just keeps evolving over and over and over again. You have to pay guys that are overpriced at times just to establish the culture.
So, Nate, and then do you? I think I agree with everything so far, but to the point that you're making, do you like the Diggs signing, or do you think that it's just a player who's too far past his prime?
I in a way I do, but in a way I don't, because, like I said, who knows what's going to happen with Diggs? You can't keep playing this game. Okay, you got to get guys like DK Metcalf. You have to put yourself and expose yourself out there. If not, this is the reason why you're a 4-12 team or 4-13 team. Okay, you got to get guys that are young, come in here and establish with Drake May. Diggs is on the back nine. Everybody knows that. And who knows what he's going to put up for numbers?
Absolutely. Nate, I agree. And that's what I'm saying. I know that Diggs is on the back nine. I think, John, what we're both agreeing with is his talent level, his core talent level is so high that even that guy on the back nine is a lot better than everybody else in your room.
Yeah, and to the caller's point, like on the spending, and look, I'm not absolving the Crafts for building a lighthouse instead of signing DeAndre Hopkins or being 5 years too late on building the new football facility they're building. But part of the reason they haven't spent as much the last 10 years, they haven't had the guys to spend money on. I mean, the last time they gave a first-round pick a second contract was Dante Hightower, and he was drafted in 2012.
Well, re-signed everybody last offseason, and it was not the right move.
And part of it was they kind of had to because they had to get to the cap floor. It's
pathetic.
But you look at some of their early round. I mean, what were they going to do? Give Dominique Easley a second contract, or Cyrus Jones, or Malcolm Brown, or N'Keal Harry,
I would say,
or Mac Jones?
The major argument against that is Jacoby Myers.
Yeah, and that
a lot of people will look at that and say, "What a goof up that was!"
And Joe Tooney too, right?
Like, right.
I think those were both big mistakes.
Like,
but I think,
why couldn't you recognize the talent you had in the room, and then you go to Juju Smith-Schuster, which doubles down and makes it look even worse?
And I agree. And I think obviously they got that 100%. I got that wrong too, but they got that 100% wrong. But you go back to when they did draft well early. Like Richard Seymour got a second contract, Ty Warren did, Devin McCourty did, Rob Gronkowski did, Logan Mankin set the record for a guard contract when he got his second contract. So again, I'm not absolving them.
Well,
but
now,
I think,
Joe Cardona continues to get high contracts.
You know, he's the last guy on the roster who won a Super Bowl hit.
I know.
Yeah, I know.
We
you
will
knew that.
Get to that.
But I'm not absolving them. Again, they should have spent more over the last decade or last 5 years. But part of it is they haven't had the guys. So now they have a guy in Diggs, another guy in Carlton Davis, another guy in Milton Williams, and even go back to last year, I'd put Christian Barmore in this category. Guys that were worth spending the money on, those guys you should spend the money on to keep around. So, look, Christian Gonzalez and Drake May will get second contracts in a few years. That'll be a lot of money. I think the bigger issue here is that they haven't had the guys to do it. It's one of the reasons they suck now. You have back-to-back four-win seasons because one with the greatest coach of all time, the other with a brand-new head coach, same result, because your roster's been one of the worst in the entire NFL.
I agree. It all goes back to the draft, but there are certainly
instances. I think that's the original sin, if you will.
There are certainly instances when you can knock the spending.
Oh, and Jacoby Myers, Joe Tooney,
exactly.
100%. Yeah, and again, I'm not absolving
it. It's a big debate. Both things are bad. Like, we can all agree that both things are bad. Speaking of everything that's bad, on the other side, we will get into expectations for the Patriots this year. I was on BST last night. We were throwing around our win expectations.
Elite show. BST Fridays with Mego. Was it Kayla Burton and Mike Hurley, too?
Yeah, two buds. So on the other side, we're going to talk about what are your expectations for the team. We will continue taking your calls on Stefon Diggs and his expectations for stats, your reaction to his contract. And I promise we will get into the Red Sox a little bit later in the show, right after this. Megan Adelini, Mego, that was weird. I've never just called myself Megan.
Hey, Megan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes me feel like I'm in
You know
trouble.
Who calls you Megan? So when my parents listen, since of course they listen, my mom's like, oh, you're on with Megan again.
Aww.
Yes, Mego, but yes, Megan.
I feel like people do that when they're trying to be respectful.
Yeah, my mom calls you Megan.
That's very nice.
You've never met her, but she calls you Megan.
Well, hello, Mrs. Lyons.
Yes.
The elder Mrs. Lyons, and I say that respectfully.
Yes, I don't think my wife would want to be called the elder Mrs. Lyons, so yeah, that's fine.
Is she a Mrs. Lyons? Can I ask, did she take your name?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
All right, I'm not doing that.
That's okay.
I decided not to do that.
That's okay. But, honestly, though, you could do the reverse, because like Mr. Mego, that's kind of got a ring to it.
I don't think he would like that either.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. That's okay. I don't think I would. So
his name is much simpler than my name, but because my name is tied to what I do, I'm so,
that's
like
true.
When
it's
I was growing up,
for you.
I was like, Adelini is such a freaking mouthful. And then on the playground, kids would call you Tortellini and say you smell like spaghetti. And so my whole life, up until like my mid-20s. I was looking forward to getting rid of this incredibly complicated name that you have to spell out to people all the time. And now I'm stuck with it. And
so
now
it's really your fault for being a famous Boston media member.
I wouldn't say famous, but I definitely
I would say, Jacob, would we say famous Boston media?
100%.
Articles online tied to my name, and I can't just go and change it at this point. And my husband's name, his last name is incredibly simple. So I do everything in his name, like restaurants and all that, but I'm not actually changing it.
Yeah, that's
is it Mannix?
I did find it.
Did you know that? So I was on with Fitzy for filling in for afternoons because Andy was out on Monday.
Yes, I listened to that. That's a good show.
And Stiz thought I was married to Chris Mannix for the last year.
Mego Mannix does flow pretty well.
It sounds like a UFC fighter.
Oh, Mego. Okay.
Like it sounds like I'm promoting energy drinks. Well, ripping out
here's Mego Mannix for Celsius Energy. Yeah,
something like that. I don't know. Don't say that because I think we have a competitor somewhere else. Let's grab a call here. This is Kevin and Quincy wants to talk about some of the standards we're setting for Steph Diggs. What's going on, Kevin?
Hey, good afternoon, John. Good afternoon, Megan. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well, Kevin.
So I think like 1,000 yards. That standard needs to, like, go away, especially with 17 games. That's only 59 yards. It's a little less than 59 yards per game. I know that, like, receivers have a hard time staying healthy. I understand that. But, like, if you think about it, you want a guy that gets 80 yards a game, you know, or 90. But maybe I'm unrealistic, but if you're going to have a number one receiver, you got to have someone that puts up 1,500, not 1,000. And also, Megan, what is your obsession with the American Revolution, and how do you know so much about Lexington and Concord, considering you're from Maryland? I don't understand that.
Okay, first of all, one of the first original 13 colonies, Maryland. So I, too, am very invested in the American Revolution and the history around it. I love Lexington and Concord.
So,
like, those towns are a little bit out there, and they're very fancy. But if I had a job where I didn't have to be in Boston in one way or another basically every day, I would go to there.
Okay.
I would spend all my money on some old colonial house out there that has like a scary cellar, and that's my dream. Maybe I'd have a horse or two outside. That's what I want.
The ghost of Sam Adams is in the basement.
Oh, I'd love that.
So,
and there's like a weird little plaque outside on the fence, and it goes back to some soldier from the 1700s. Like, that's my dream.
So did you see the Greg Hill Show Ick Bracket? Because one of them was history buff, and I thought I was personally attacked.
Well,
so they think we're both, although it's a female
depends.
To male icky
no,
thing.
No, I think it depends. First of all, I'm not like a super history buff. I like American history because I just think, I don't know. I
you
find
do?
The, right. that like a fascinating time, but there's different levels. Like, you're a World War II history buff, or are you a 1960s kind of like Cultural Revolution history buff, or are you colonial American Revolution, or are you going back? Like, are you one of those nerds who's like really into ancient Egypt and the pyramids and everything? Like, there's different levels to
that's true. And there's also a difference between
or Greek mythology. Have you ever met somebody who's like a Greek mythology buff?
That
those
can get
people,
deep. That
those
can
people
get...
are weird.
Yeah. And also there's a difference between, like, I'm going to read a book or watch a documentary and, like, I'm going to be a Civil War reenactor, right? I guess there's difference.
I have different, always wanted
not
to.
Not judgment, but I'd say that's different levels.
I've always wanted to meet someone who's one of the, well, it would be Revolutionary War reenactor around here, right?
Yeah.
Because, like,
just
where
go
I
to the
up,
end zone at Gillette Stadium, Mego.
Where I grew up, there was a lot of, in Maryland, like, there was a lot of Civil War stuff around there, out in Virginia and West Virginia, and it was, like, very...
Both sides?
It's Civil War. It's just like incredibly sad, very depressing to go on field trips. Like the Revolutionary War, it's like started freedom.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I know there's a lot of loss of life, but that it's like a great story.
Yeah.
Civil War is like, oh, this is very sad.
We would go to the Museum of Science or the Freedom Trail. Those were our kind of field trips almost every year as kids.
Dude, we just went to every single museum in Washington, D.C.
Those are the best. I love those museums, by the way.
I've even gone to the Postal Museum.
Okay, that I have not been
like,
to.
Like, you go to, when I grew up in that area.
This is how we make envelopes type museum?
Yeah, well, I think it was actually the Postage Stamp Museum. So it was the history of stamps. It's that you run out of places to go. You can only go to the Museum of Natural History so many times.
I'm a big fan of the Air and Space Museum, especially the hangar at Dulles Airport. That's awesome.
Here's something that I think COVID has really messed up. I know it's messed up a lot of things for people. But now with museums like Air and Space Museum, one of my friends who I went to college with in D.C., she took her kids down to D.C. on a trip, and they wanted to go to the Air and Space Museum. So she just walks up to go in. and they ask, this was last summer, do you have a reservation? And she's like, no, it's a museum. And they said, no, we only take reservations ahead of time. And I think that's a COVID thing that that a lot of places started doing, like where it used to be, you walk up, maybe you have to wait in line for like 10 minutes because it's a crowded summer day and there's a lot of people there. But like just being turned away and saying you're not going to be able to come in the entire day.
Yeah,
like,
that sucks. Because I went in 2016 and that wasn't a policy then. Mm-hmm. So obviously it's been since
No,
then.
I think it's changed. I don't know how we got on this. We were supposed to get to Patriots expectations and instead we got into all of our American history.
Oh, yeah. Our potential Greg Hill bracket icks that we have.
Different levels of being a history buff, which is an apparent ick. I love a history buff. So if you want to wax poetic about history, I'm here for it. But on the other side, we will get to our expectations for the Patriots. We will get to the Red Sox. We will discuss what we think is going on with Rafael Devers and what our guy Rob Bradford examined down there in Texas last night and the day before, right after this.